I've always had a lot of drive with this sort of thing. It's always been something that I've very much enjoyed. So I've put in a lot of hard work, but it has never felt like, or generally it hasn't felt like hard work. It's just been a hobby. It's been something that I've wanted to do. And starting that quite young, it became a habit, and it's just something that I did consistently for a long period of time. And I think that's really the key to success.
Yo, Gorillas, welcome to the Athlete Insider Podcast by Go Nation. My name is Phil, and today's guest is somebody who is well known in the calisthenics scene, somebody who inspires hundreds of thousands, even millions on the internet with his superhuman power, with his superhuman skills. I'm really happy to welcome you from Australia, Simon Atta.
Thanks.
Yes, we finally made it. We made the interview possible that so many people were requesting. I'm really happy to welcome you to the show. And to kick off, Simon, how do you present yourself?
I'm Simon, also known as Simonster. I'm a physiotherapist and a calisthenics professional. So I've been doing calisthenics or some form of bodyweight training for about 20 years. I have a bit of a diverse background. And now mostly what I do is teach calisthenics and then coach calisthenics.
Great. And you're one of the well-known people who made it to make calisthenics their profession, and who is able to live the sport, let's say it. And I'm really looking forward to get to know you better, your life, your training advice, etc. And tell us more about your story. You're combining gymnastics, you're combining breakdance, you have, an interesting background. Tell us more about it.
Yeah, so I started when I was quite young. My parents got me into gymnastics. I never did that for a very long time. I did that for probably about a year when I was about 10 years old. And a friend of mine who I went to school with, who also did gymnastics, was taking breakdancing classes. And he said, "You should come and try breakdancing." And I thought, "What's that?" Dancing? And and he was like, "Just come. It's really cool. It's like spinning on your head and all that kind of stuff." So I went along. I really enjoyed it. And thereafter, I stopped gymnastics and switched just to breakdancing. But in gymnastics, there's always a strength and conditioning component, or generally strength and conditioning is a big component of gymnast's training. So while I was training gymnastics, we train some technique, and then at some point in the class, there'd usually be about 30 minutes or an hour of body weight strength and conditioning, or what we now call calisthenics. Mm-hmm. And as I was trying to learn some power moves, things like flares and air flares and combine different moves, I always thought if I was a little bit stronger, I could probably do this. If I just had the strength, I could probably get away with some technical errors, and it would help me, you know, learn the move and perfect the move. So I started taking some of the bodyweight strength training or the calisthenics that I'd learned in gymnastics and applying that to my breakdancing. So it's always been a staple form of training that I've kept along the way. And then with breakdancing, there's a lot of freedom. I always liked the spectacular moves and the things that looked impossible. So the flips, the tricks, the hard balance moves. So that's where the flipping comes in and the power moves and combining a few different aspects.
Okay, and definitely makes sense when I scroll on your YouTube channel to the bottom. It's like 9 years ago, you already made some, I'm not into breakdance, but some air flares, I think that's called, and like spinning really, really fast and on your hands. And like you said, 20 years of experience, 20 years of sports now.
Yeah, so I'm 30 now, and I started with gymnastics when I was about 10 and switched to breakdancing at about 11. So,
wow. Okay. So I bet you can teach and share some stuff from your experience to the young generation, because I bet there are quite a few listeners who are like in calisthenics for 2 years, for 1 year even. And somebody with 20 years is, I think you can share a lot about injury prevention and stuff like that later on. What are the benefits? Yeah, like you started with breakdance. You also took a few things from gymnastics, I guess. What are the benefits that these sports brought to your calisthenics career, let's call it?
Yes. So I'm a bit unique when you look at me compared with other calisthenics athletes. I think because I have such a diverse background, and what that's given me is the freedom to express myself a little bit more diversely with my performances. So, you know, it's not just statics, it's not just dynamics, it's not just hand balancing, it's not just flips, it's kind of meshing these all together. And I really like that because it allows a lot of artistic expression in calisthenics. You can join air flares into planche, into hollow backs, into hand hops, into whatever kind of move you want. So that's what I've that's what I really enjoy about having the diverse background that I do.
Makes sense. And did you ever think about competing in a professional like competition?
So I used to compete with breakdancing, mm-hmm. But once I started focusing more and more on calisthenics, I never really competing was never really something that I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I've always been very interested in anatomy and the kind of academic and sports science side of training. And I really enjoy teaching. So that's kind of where my focus has been as I've switched over to doing more calisthenics as I've gotten older.
Makes sense. People always ask this, how heavy and how tall are you?
So I'm 179 centimeters.
Wow.
For people in the USA, that's about 5'10 and a half, between 5'10 and 5'11. And I'm about 77 kilos. I think I tend to be between about 76 and 80 kilos.
Wow. Okay. I didn't expect that. I thought you were smaller because like the performance that you do, we all know that let's say 5 centimeters less would make it a lot easier for you. And it's a benefit that a lot of calisthenics athletes have, like from the pros, that they are a little smaller. Yeah, that makes it even more impressive. That's good.
Thanks. Yeah. I hope that that motivates some people, because I found a lot of taller athletes, especially a lot of younger, less experienced athletes, when they're starting calisthenics, often hear, oh, I'm tall. Am I ever going to be able to do this? And there are some people taller than me who can do, you know, amazing, hold planche a lot longer than I can, mm-hmm. hold front lever a lot longer than I can. And it is a benefit to be smaller, but you can't change your height. All you can do is train and increase increase your strength with the body that you're given. So if you are, for the taller athletes out there, try not to be discouraged. You can achieve a great deal of proficiency with calisthenics. And I think it's even more impressive seeing somebody who's 6 foot holding the front lever compared with somebody who's, you know, 5'5". So,
yeah. I know that, like, we often receive messages, oh, please interview a tall athlete. And these are often people, who are like above 2 meters. So I don't know the yeah. American size, but like really, really the tall people. They often laugh about, when I say, oh, that's quite tall. And, like, I'm also 178 centimeters, so nearly as tall as you. And, they laugh about our size. Because they are like 2 meters and 20 centimeters yeah. higher. Do you think it's possible to get to your performances with this height?
I think if you're, you know, if you're 2 meters tall, or you're 6'7", or you're, you know, you're the average height of somebody in the NBA, I think it's very unlikely that you'll be able to excel and be, you know, one of the best calisthenics athletes. But I still think you can achieve a lot more than what people would expect from you. You see a lot of people who are well above 6 foot holding a front lever. There are a few guys above 6 foot holding a planche. I think if you train, and you obviously have to make a few more sacrifices than somebody who's a little bit younger, it will be more difficult for you to achieve that than if you had have been, you know, 5'5". But I think a great deal can still be achieved. With that, it's very difficult to answer that, because there's so much variation between people. Somebody's genetic ability, you know, at 6 foot might be more than somebody else who is 5'8" or, you know, 5'7". So it's, yeah, it's very difficult to say, you know, will I ever be able to achieve this? The answer is I don't know. But why not give it a try?
Sure. And that's where the mindset, I think, pops in, that it's not, my goal shouldn't be, I want to be the next Symonster, but my goal should be the best version of myself, you know, and
exactly.
Yeah, but it's good that you say that. When I look from the outside of you, on you as an athlete, and I personally follow your videos since the first video that you did in this boxing ring, I think. I think it's like 6 years old or 5 years old, yeah. Something like that. I always ask myself, how is it possible to come to that kind of performance? And that's the question that I wanted to ask you. What do you think is your secret, your formula to success? How did you get the athlete that you are today? Is it genetics? Is it that you work harder than everybody else? Is it your scientific approach? Is it your background knowledge from physiotherapy? What is it that makes you succeed?
I honestly think it's a large combination of all those things. And a lot of that has to do with luck as well. Starting off with as we spoke about earlier, with the background that I have, it's quite a unique background. And I think that gives me a lot of edge in the performances that I do and makes my type of performance quite unique. But then along the way, I've always had a lot of drive with this sort of thing. It's always been something that I've very much enjoyed. So I've put in a lot of hard work, but it has never felt like, or generally it hasn't felt like hard work. It's just been a hobby. It's been something that I've wanted to do. And starting that quite young, it became a habit, and it's just something that I did consistently for a long period of time. And I think that's the key to, I think that's really the key to success. When you look at athletes who've achieved a great deal, it's just consistent hard work over a really long period. With that, I've had a lot of luck on my side with good training partners, good teachers, being able to travel, good work-life balance, that have helped with that as well.
Yeah, it's true, because there are so many variants. For example, somebody who works in night shifts, somebody like who has a lot of pressure on his body, not good work by life balance, all these things influence the performance, right?
Yeah. And even small things that I was very lucky to have. For example, I went to university very close to where I live. My commute time was quite short. So that gave me a lot of time for training. So others had to commute, you know, 90 minutes each way. I had a 10-minute bike ride to my university. So that's, you know, it can seem like a little very small thing, but that amount of time really adds up when you look at that over the course of 4 or so years.
That's true. And it brings responsibility to you as a person that you use this time right, these 50 minutes that you spare every day that other people are sitting in the tram or whatever, you invest this time in training, stretching, preparing food, whatever.
Yeah. One thing I'll say for the younger athletes out there or the less experienced athletes is often when you look at really high level people and you look at their training schedules, it can seem crazy. So when you look at these people who can do amazing things and they're training for 4 hours a day, if you're just starting and you're quite young and it's your first year of calisthenics, it's very unlikely that you're going to be able to go from doing nothing to doing 4 hours a day. And these habits take time to build in the same way that strength and technique takes time to build. So all these guys who are doing crazy things and training for hours and hours on end probably didn't start that way. So it is okay to start small, build a habit, find a style of training that you enjoy and a habit that is sustainable and build from there.
Yeah. because the interview before you is an interview with Sergio Di Pasquale from Italy, and he is an endurance athlete, and he like does crazy numbers in his workouts, like 2,000 dips, 2,000 squats, like this stuff, you know. And if I see this as a beginner and I want to progress fast, I might have the temptation to do the same reps, the numbers, but I just take a little longer, a lot longer, let's say. But it's not good for the joints, etc. So I think the healthy way is definitely what you said, to build the habit.
Yeah. And even if there's two downsides to that, one is that you might just get an overuse injury. Your body hasn't acclimated to this style of training. You do too much too soon. It can't recover from it. And you get an injury, and then you need to take, you know, 3 months off when you could have just slowed down a little bit. That's one downside. The other downside that is less... I feel like people don't talk about as much is just that you probably won't enjoy it. if you go from doing nothing to trying 2,000 dips a day, you're probably not going to have a lot of fun with that. And you'll probably just think, why am I doing this? Calisthenics sucks. And there goes your, there goes your drive, and you might just stop there. Whereas if you started with, you know, 3 sets of 10, a few times a week and built from there, you might really enjoy this style of training, build a habit, and you might be able to progress to the point where you can do 2,000 dips in a day.
True. How many hours do you put into training currently per week?
Yeah, it's not very consistent. It very much depends on what my schedule is like and if I'm traveling or if I'm teaching. But generally, I try to do a couple of hours most days of the week. So maybe 1 to 2 hours 4 to 5 times a week.
Okay. And how do you put so many disciplines, so many, let's call it skills, in one schedule, in 1 week, let's call it?
Yeah. So I don't actually train every skill in my skill set every week. So a lot of the skills that I've learned and I've mastered them to a level that I'm happy with, I usually just put them in the maintenance bin, and I might come back to them once every, month or so, just to make sure that they're still crisp and I can still do them well. If they're getting sloppy, I might give them a little bit more attention. But things like air flares or head spins for me now, I could not do an air flare for 6 months and still be able to do them quite well. So generally what I do is periodize my training. And what that means is generally manipulating what you do so you can peak for different things at different times. So I might do blocks where I train a little bit more with breakdancing, blocks where I train a little bit more with statics, blocks where I train a little bit more with dynamics, depending on what I'm trying to achieve at that particular time. But as a general rule, I train skills before I train strength. So things like hand balancing, flips, power moves, or breakdancing moves, they come first. After that, I'll train my strength exercises generally for about an hour, and then I might finish off with some mobility work.
Okay. And do you also train reps on a consistent, like the basics, pull-ups, dips, etc.?
Yeah. So when I say strength, I mean all forms of strength, static, dynamic. So that will include things like static planche holds, static lever holds, dynamic things like lever raises and, planche negatives, planche raises, planche push-ups. And then I do a lot of the basics. So things like dips, weighted chin-ups, weighted pull-ups, those sorts of exercises.
Okay. And are you stronger in pull or in push generally?
Definitely in push. Okay. With my background, I've done basically exclusively pushing exercises most of my life. Starting with breakdancing, I was always doing handstand push-ups, planche, those sorts of exercises to help with breakdancing. There's no pulling in breakdancing. You can't pull on the floor. So I exclusively worked on pushing exercises probably up until about 3 years ago when I started integrating more pulling exercises.
Okay, interesting. And if I want to take a shortcut as a beginner or as an intermediate or even as an advanced athlete, you also offer your training programs. And you offer the shortcut, you offer knowledge, etc. To people like me. Can you tell us more about it?
Yeah, so I have a few training programs and I'm always trying to develop more. Probably the best known one is Project Calisthenics, which is a general program that I've developed that has three levels: beginner, intermediate, and advanced. So beginner is for those of you who've done no training whatsoever, who are working towards your first rep of dips or chin-ups or can only do a few reps. Intermediate is to build capacity with those things. So if you could do 10 chin-ups, 10 dips, and you just want to improve your capacity and get an introduction into things like planche and lever. And advanced is for the more advanced athletes who can hold a tuck planche, hold a tuck lever, or even hold a full planche or full lever and want to start improving their capacity and working towards more advanced skills like lever raises, planche push-ups, one-arm chin-ups, and those sorts of skills. So these are general programs that include pushing, pulling, as well as leg exercises. I know legs isn't a big component of calisthenics, but I've included it just to make it a comprehensive program. And then alongside the general strengthening program, which is there to build strength and build a foundation in a balanced manner, there are tutorials for skills like the handstand, handstand push-up, planche, lever, where I give a technical breakdown of that particular skill, which muscles are working, what technical cues do you need to think about, and what are the progressions to get there. So the reason I put this together is these kind of tutorials for these skills, you can find them all over the place, but it's very hard to find high quality tutorials for all of these things all in the same place that are curated. So I've tried to do that to take the guesswork out of training, where you can just say, hey, what position should my hands be in the planche? Okay, click on the planche tutorial.
Yeah, and it makes such a big difference in the head, even just having a plan to follow and like a program and really numbers and professional advice than just, as you said, guessing or like searching it together from YouTube videos. It's definitely a good start to do that like this. But if you really want to go deep in and want to take it serious, it's definitely something that people can profit from, like 20 years, as you said. And we also prepared a little bonus for everybody who already sticked until here for the podcast. So everybody, all the listeners are getting 10% off with the code coronation10 on your website in the shop. So everybody can check the bio, the description with the link, with the code, etc. And profit from 10% off with the code coronation10. Great. If you see, like, you're in touch with a lot of athletes, I guess, with your role as a coach, as an athlete, as an influencer also, what are the main three things that people, if they improve these three things in their workout, they would get much better results? What are the main problems that you see?
I think the main thing is consistency. I think that's by far the most important thing. Training with consistency over a long period of time, that's what you need to get good results. You know, that famous saying, Rome wasn't built in a day, neither was planche or front lever. So, understand that these skills take a lot of time. Progress won't happen every day, especially the more advanced you get, progress tends to slow down. Yeah. But you need to stick at it over a really long period of time. Another thing that I often see, which kind of relates to the same point, is people chopping and changing their routines too frequently. And this is especially true for beginners, where there are so many skills to learn. I want to learn one-arm chin-up, planche, front lever, back lever, handstand, handstand push-up, one-arm handstand, human flag. How do I do all of this at once? Yeah. And the truth is, you can't really do all of this at once. If you try to include exercises for each of those skills in your program, you do flag on Monday, you do bench press on Wednesday, you squat on a Friday and do chin-ups, you're not getting repeated exposure to the same exercises, which is very important to progressively overload and to make progress with them. You need repeated exposure to the same stimulus to optimize results. So what I encourage people to do is pick a program, focus on a few skills at a time, stick at that for a period of time, you know, at least 6 to 8 weeks, so that you can make progress. When you plateau or when you get bored or when your goals change, that's when you can switch up your program to focus on other things. One thing that that might not be intuitive for beginners is that a lot of these skills help each other. So a great example of this is if I really want to unlock the planche, the handstand push-up, and the planche push-up, the handstand push-up, and the 90-degree push-up, I can think, oh, there's three skills that I want to learn. I need to include exercises from each of them. Mm-hmm. But that's not really true. If I improve my planche push-up, I guarantee that my handstand push-up will improve as well. If I improve my handstand push-up capacity, my 90-degree push-up capacity should improve as well. If you think of a planche and a back lever, they're essentially the same move. They use the exact same muscles. The only difference is the shoulder angle. Mm-hmm. In a planche, your shoulder's flexed about 30 degrees. In a back lever, your shoulder's extended about 30, 45 degrees. So by improving your planche, you will also get some transfer to your back lever. So if you focus on planche for a period of 6 to 8 weeks and then focus on your back lever for a period of 6 to 8 weeks and improve your capacity with planche, then improve your capacity with back lever, you probably get a much better outcome than chopping and changing every week and not getting repeated exposure to the same thing. So those are two points that I'd make. Consistency over a long period of time, consistency with your training program, not chopping and changing exercises. The final thing is to listen to your body and not train into pain. The saying, no pain, no gain, is, you know, very motivating. It's a very sexy saying, but it can do a lot of harm. I think the intention with that saying is really good, that without effort, there's no gain. So you need to be challenging yourself to make adaptations and to change yourself. And that's true. But your training should never be painful in the sense that something is hurting and you're concerned that you're injuring a tissue. If that happens, you should back off, rest, or modify the exercise so that you can do it without pain. You're much better off taking a few days rest than being forced to take 3 months rest because you've torn your bicep tendon.
Okay. It seems that you prepared these three things. They definitely make sense. And it's impressive how they come like from your spirit like that quickly. But I can definitely relate. I can definitely see this. Because there are like hundreds of exercises that you could do as a calisthenics athlete, because calisthenics means freedom of movement. You can do everything. It's not like bench pressing, curling, and that's it. But you can do everything. So it's definitely a temptation to want to learn too many things at once. And about the no pain, no gain, do you think it is beneficial if you work really hard and next day you have like muscle pain and feel sore? Is it a good pain or is it a bad pain? Is it a sign that you went too far?
Yeah, no, I think muscle soreness, delayed onset muscle soreness, what people call DOMS, is absolutely fine. Mm-hmm. It's not necessary. It doesn't have to happen. So if you're not getting sore, that's absolutely fine. You can make good strength gains without getting sore. But getting sore can be a good sign that you've had a good workout and that, you know, you've fatigued your muscles and they need a bit of time to recover. But I would differentiate that strongly from pain, because if you speak to any trained athlete, they can very well tell the difference between DOMS and the onset of an injury or a different type of pain.
Okay. How did you have any injuries in your career?
Hundreds. we can talk about.
Yeah, tell us more
about some of them. Oh, just to go back to the point about DOMS. Sorry for jumping around. I'm a bit jet lagged. Just landed in hotel quarantine. Just to go back to the point about delayed onset muscle soreness, like I said, it's not essential. So if you're not getting sore, that's okay. Some people tend to get quite sore. Other people don't tend to get as sore. And that tends to happen when you do unaccustomed activity. So if you want to get really sore, just do something that you never do. You never do bench press, do it. You'll get sore. If you run up a hill backwards, you will be sore the next day. But like I said, you need repeated exposure to the same thing to make strength gains and to overload. And the more you do something, the less sore you'll get. So just because you're not getting as sore anymore as you were a few weeks ago does not mean that your workouts aren't as effective. What I tend to try to aim for with my workouts is to be a bit fatigued the next day. So if, let's say I train a pushing day, I do handstand pushups, planche pushups. The next day, I want to feel like I've worked out. I want my muscles to be fatigued or slightly sore. I want to feel like the next day I can't do the same workout at the same intensity. But a day after or a day or two after, you should feel recovered enough that you can do that again. So if you're feeling so sore that, you know, you've done a workout and you're sore for a week, that's probably not an ideal place to be. You should feel that, you know, in a couple of days, you can repeat that same workout again. And through that method, you get repeated exposure to the same stimulus at a high intensity. And over time, you can overload and build on your current intensity.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense, because it's a mistake that you can easily run into, just going all in, no pain, no gain, as you said, this mentality, and then being sore for 1 week. Okay, let's come to your injuries, injury.
So I've had a ton of injuries. I can name a bunch. I did a few years of martial arts. I did a lot of jiu-jitsu, and I had a left shoulder dislocation, tore my labrum. So I had a reconstruction on my left shoulder in 2009. I've had meniscal tears on both knees. Also jiu-jitsu injuries, which I've had knee scopes for. I tore my adductor longus tendon, or tendon in my groin. I ripped that off the bone in, I think, 2015 or 2016. I slipped and tore that completely off the bone. So that put me out for about 3 months. And then I've had all the little injuries you can imagine, ganglions in the wrist. I've had golfer's elbow training, you know, one-arm chin-ups, rotator cuff tears and tendinopathies and, yeah, you name it.
Okay, cool. Sounds good. What are the takeaways that you can give to the listeners?
So injuries can be very discouraging. Not only do you have physical pain, but if calisthenics is what you love to do and you can't do it at the same ability, or you can't train the skills that you want to train, it can be really discouraging, and it can be really it can be really harmful to your mental health. So what I tend to do is do your best to stay positive and try to focus on what you can do. So I've always found, generally, when you have an injury, it provides an avenue to train something that you don't normally train. So if your right wrist hurts, you might practice hand balancing on your left hand and improve your weaker side. If you're the front of your shoulder hurts with planche, you might take that next 6-8 weeks while you're resting to really work on front lever and work on chin-ups and work on exercises that don't cause pain. So when you have an injury, there's generally something you can do that won't aggravate it, that still allows you to rest that area while you can make improvements in other areas. That would be my biggest takeaway.
Makes sense.
Don't push into pain.
And how to prevent them definitely makes sense to work around them once you have it. What are the things that you do today to not get injured again?
Yeah, unfortunately, injuries are an inevitable part of training. They almost everybody at a high level will get an injury. Some people say things like, this means that you were training wrong. This means that, you know, you did this wrong. But if you look at every sport at the highest level, people are getting injured. And in the NBA, people have access to the best nutrition, the best physical therapists, the best sports doctors, the best surgeons, and they still get injured. So there is nothing, no matter what anyone tells you, there's nothing that you can do to bulletproof yourself and make yourself completely immune to injury. However, there are some things you can do to reduce your risk of injury. The few things that you can do through training, one thing I would say before training is to just be smart with your training, progress gradually. Overuse injuries tend to happen when you do too much too soon. So if you go from, you know, you take a handstand workshop with your favorite hand balancer, you go from doing no handstands to now doing 3 hours a day on your hands, your wrists aren't used to that. That's a good way to give yourself an overuse injury of the wrist or the shoulder or the elbow. So progress gradually, allow you, your body time to acclimate. Listen to your body. If your body's consistently sore, if things are increasing, if pain is increasing in joints, that's probably a sign that you're going too fast or doing too much too soon. So go slow, listen to your body. Don't try stupid things. If you can just reduce your risk by not trying things that are way out of your ability level, you will significantly reduce your risk of injury. So that's probably the most important thing. Be smart with your training. Beyond that, a few things that you can do to help mitigate your risk of injury. Warming up is very important. So doing a very solid warm-up. If you want some details about warming up and the science of it, and what to do, I have a video on YouTube about that. The other two things that are really useful, or the three things that you can change through training to reduce your risk of injury. One is strength. The stronger you are, the less chance you have of injuring that particular area. So getting nice and strong. You can do that lots of ways. You can do your traditional rehab, prehab exercises with a band, wrist push-ups, those sorts of things. But your tissues will adapt with training anyway. So just be gradual. Over time, things will get stronger. Things will get more flexible if you pay attention to that and you stretch and you do mobility work. And your neuromuscular control will get better. So if you're practicing things like hand balancing, handstand alignment, that will improve your technique. And if you have good strength, good flexibility or mobility, and good neuromuscular control, you're in the best position that your body can be to be resilient against stresses against it. So the stronger you are, the less chance you have of getting injured when a lot of force goes through that particular joint or muscle. The more mobile you are, the less chance you have of getting injured when you're contracting in a lengthened position or when your body goes to a position that is at the end of its range. The more control you have, the more ability you have to keep your joints stable and prevent them from going to places that you don't want to go, going to positions that are potentially injurious. Yeah. So just to summarize, be smart. Don't do dumb things. Progress gradually, get strong, get mobile, and develop neuromuscular control.
Okay. And sleep, that's also a question that we received. How does your sleep schedule look like apart from the jet lag?
Yeah, I try to sleep as much as possible. There's a lot of evidence that sleep is a really good thing, and getting as much sleep as you can, or what is known in the literature as sleep extension, can actually be really beneficial in terms of performance. I try to sleep as much as I can. So I try to get eight or more hours a night. One thing that you can do to improve performance or improve recovery, what's known in the literature as sleep extension, is trying to sleep as much as you can. So let's say you wake up in the morning, you think you can sleep another hour, go back to sleep, get that hour if you can do it.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So there is no limit. So because I know the phenomenon from where I was, I don't know, 6-7 years ago, when I slept, as a student, I slept on the weekend, maybe 10, maybe 11 hours, and I felt so tired afterwards.
Yeah. I often feel like that if it's not something that I do consistently, or if it's, you know, if it's a change to my sleeping habit.
Okay. So
I think that's often the case that you see with, especially, you know, when you're young and you're studying and you've got this week where you might be sleep deprived, and then on the weekend you sleep for a really long time at a strange hour. But if you can have a consistent sleeping pattern, good sleep hygiene, and try to maximize the amount of sleep you get, that's a really good thing you can do for your recovery.
Okay, good. Because that makes sense. Somebody who sleeps 6 hours the week and then on the weekend he thinks, oh, now I can get back some sleep, and then he sleeps like 10, 11, 12 hours. Makes sense that his body is not in a habit, in a flow, let's call it.
Yeah.
Nice. We're closely coming to an end. I would be interested in what are your goals for 2021, for this year? We kicked off in a new year. Did you make some plans? What can people expect from you?
So this year I just want to make a lot more content and tutorials. So I'm planning to get a handstand push-up specific tutorial out in the first half of the year. Basically, I just want to make the best quality, most detailed tutorials that I can for a particular topic. So if you want to learn about the handstand push-up, you can get Project Handstand Push-Up and you will learn absolutely every little thing that you could need to about that skill. So that's the goal this year, is to focus on tutorials. I hope to get maybe two out within the year of a high quality.
Great. That's sounds good. Something that I had as a question, because you're the first guy from Australia that I interview. A few years ago, I made some research about calisthenics, and in Australia, it seemed like that calisthenics also means a dance, a kind of. What's up with that?
So when I started hearing about, when calisthenics started getting popular, you know, 5-10 years ago, the word started getting thrown around a little bit more. I never used it, because in Australia, calisthenics is synonymous with rhythmic gymnastics. So when you think about calisthenics in Australia, or when you say that, people think about girls in leotards with ribbons, playing with ribbons. And when people ask me what I train now, even in Australia, sometimes I say, oh, I do calisthenics. And they just look at me like, what? I think it's becoming a little bit, calisthenics referring to body weight training is becoming a little bit more mainstream. People really know what you're talking about now. But yeah, the past 5 years or so, when you say calisthenics in Australia, some people might think you're talking about rhythmic gymnastics. So if you encounter that, that's why.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, that was something that's on my mind since a few years, so I finally have it. Thank you. We're coming to some quick questions, quick answers. First question, pizza or burger?
Burger.
Okay. Do you have to eat? Do you eat some delivered food in the next time due to your quarantine, or?
I don't know if I'm allowed, but I probably will. And if not, I will when I get out of quarantine.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really strict here. I'm in this room for 14 days. I can't leave the room. I can't open the door without a reason. So I can only open the door when they knock to deliver my meals.
Wow. Sounds crazy, because you just returned from the US, you said, right?
Yeah. All overseas travelers, except from New Zealand, have to quarantine for 14 days.
Interesting. So good luck in quarantine. some home workouts, some hotel work, hotel room workouts incoming, I guess. But I think you know the best how to stay motivated and stay working out.
Yeah.
Are you a dog or a cat person?
Cat. Okay. I know that's the very unpopular answer, but yeah, I like cats.
Do you have a favorite location for holidays?
I love Bali.
Okay, cool. What would you work, or what would change for you if social media just disappeared? Every YouTube, every Instagram.
I probably wouldn't have a job. I'd probably go back to being a physiotherapist because I don't think many people would have access to my programs or at least be aware of them. Yeah, I think that would be the biggest change.
Okay. Yeah, maybe you have to, maybe we see you in the newspapers then, but it's true that such a change would mean a lot for you and also for us. Yeah.
Yeah, I might have to write a book.
Yeah.
It's so old school.
Yeah, but it's not a bad thing. I think, a book is still a cool thing to do. But yeah, that's a different topic. Do you have a favorite calisthenics athlete, somebody that you follow, somebody that inspires you?
There are so many that I really like LaRosa. He's awesome. There are too many though.
Okay. Okay. I can relate because there are some, like when you see planche, when you think of planche, there is one athlete. And when you think of dynamics, there is one athlete. Yeah. There are so many.
And then I think of, I can think of like, there are so many good guys out there now that are just unbelievable. And some of these guys I've never heard of, and someone sends me a video and I think, who's this guy?
Yeah.
Yuri, someone, he's amazing.
Yeah.
But it's too hard to think of people off the top of my head right now.
Sure. Okay.
I'll have to get back to you when I'm not jet lagged.
Okay. Great. Do you have a favorite book?
Free Will by Sam Harris.
Okay. What is it about?
Whether or not you have free will and the moral implications of that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a philosophical book.
Okay. Do you have a favorite song right now?
I don't right now. But my Spotify playlist is public. If you type in my name, you can see what type of songs I like.
That's good. We will also link it in the description. And favorite movie? Do you have a favorite movie?
I like Tarantino movies. So things like Kill Bill, yeah.
Okay. The most difficult question, I guess, if you could only follow one person on Instagram, who would it be?
It'd be Gonation.
Oh, no, but seriously.
I'm not sure. I'll probably have to say my girlfriend or I'd get in trouble.
Okay. Then we will just cut away the Gornation thing and it will be good. And the thing that you have to say it. Do you have a favorite calisthenics event that you've visited?
I really enjoyed teaching a workshop. It's not a calisthenics event, but I really enjoyed teaching a workshop in Guadalajara. I think that was one of my favorite experiences.
I can guess. Okay. We're coming to an end. The question at the end is always, how can people get in touch with you? How can they ask you questions? Where do they find you?
Yep. So my website is simonsterstrength.com. My YouTube and Instagram are under the same name as well. You can go to my contact page on my website to send me an email. That's probably the best option. Alternatively, you could send me a message on Instagram or a comment on YouTube, but it's probably not as reliable as email.
Cool. And everything is in the description, all the links to your socials, to your website, and also to the programs. And again, the hint with the code GORNATION10, you get 10% off all the programs, and you can enjoy making progress and profiting from your experience. And Simon, I want to say thank you for your time, for your time just landing in Australia again with jet lag. I'm really happy that we made it possible. I think people will appreciate it. And big thank you also to everyone listening to this till the end. It's been nearly an hour. And thanks for your support. If you want to share this to your friends who could be interested in, if you want to comment it, like it, do whatever you want. And Simon, you can have the last word. Thanks for your time. I say goodbye.
Thanks for listening, guys. All the best. Happy New Year. And thanks for having me, Phil.
You're welcome.